Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 21st day of March, 2020. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and I'm going to do something, again, a bit different this week because, of course, the situation that the world is in, while it may have been obvious that it was coming for a while, is certainly a bit different because it looks like the lying waste stream media has finally even had to admit that the you-know-what has hit the fan. Which means where I want to go today isn't preparedness, because certainly when it comes to the physical and economic aspects of that, if you aren't prepared, it's already too late by now. And it's not about I told you so either, because by now most of us know that it's human nature not to pay any attention or actually do anything until it is basically too late. So I am going to focus on what I usually try to do here, which is to say, hey, given where we are, what's next and what can we do about it now? Because as bad as the panic may appear to be so far, trust me on this at least, folks, you ain't seen nothing yet. And at least in part, that's because some of the really nasty effects are the things that follow when Big Brother decides never to let a perfectly good crisis go to waste and fix it by making it a whole hell of a lot worse. I even did a show at the end of February, February 27th, as a matter of fact, entitled, What's Worse Than a Global Pandemic? Answer, what we're seeing play out starting right now. Let me kick it off with some really cute comments from the Bionic Mosquito via Lou Rockwell and other places entitled Financial Distancing. And he makes a similar point with a series of questions. What if you knew, like we all knew if we've been paying attention for years now, that financial markets were all going to burst, an inevitable outcome of the funny money and credit created, especially since 2008-09, but also starting long before then? What if you knew this bursting was going to create a calamity, both on Wall Street and Main Street? As a matter of fact, what if you planned on it and were counting on it? What if you knew martial law was in the cards, too, due to this economic distress? But, of course, you don't want to declare martial law because people might realize you had a hand in it. What if you knew, too, that the debt load was much too high? The biggest debt bubble in human history will do that. And at least one way to help drastically shrink that debt was to push hundreds, even thousands of companies into financial distress and then bankruptcy. And at the same time, you'd push a whole lot of banksters into distress, too. And what if, by doing that, you opened up the door to allow yourself, whoever you might be, you globalist deep state conspirator you, to borrow and ultimately print even more, given everyone's flight to so-called safety? What if you could solve all those problems by taking all the commercial loans off the books of the banks, while at the same time allowing the distressed debt to simply go insolvent, thereby allowing your favorite friends, who knew what was coming, to pick up assets for the price of pennies on the dollar? What if you could hold this bad debt, furthermore, at an institution that had absolutely no real risk of insolvency? Because, you know, some too-big-to-fail banksters and the money printers behind them are just plain too big to jail, too. What if all of this allowed you to take even more control of all economic, social, political, and pretty much you-name-it activity in the exact kind of a global tyranny you've been wanting to build for decades anyway? You know, you could almost call it a global financial reset. How could you set it up, though, so that you wouldn't get blamed for the financial calamity, yet bring that financial calamity on not only for your benefit, but on your time schedule? And the benefits, of course, of your closest buddies. How could you get people to voluntarily act as if there was martial law, but without having to actually declare it, in those words anyway? Well, says the Bionic Mosquito, can't think of a thing. From there, let's set up where I'm going next with a review of, let's call it, the headline du jour. There are a number to pick from, but here's just a sample of the ones that didn't make the cut, but there's some great headlines. From J.D. Hayes of Natural News, if the CDC hadn't for years just focused on gun control and social justice, well, maybe it would have been better prepared for the coronavirus pandemic. Or maybe, folks, they were prepared exactly the way they were supposed to be, because pandemics are great advertisements for what they're really selling. TechCrunch says that two Facebook's news feed spam filter, SICK, has caused links to coronavirus articles from major websites to be blocked across the platform. Guess what? It was a bug, they said. Yeah, sure. Here's one. The man playing president on TV is finally going to be allowed to close the border. The northern border. Are you kidding me? So if you're foreign terrorists looking to bring in diseases or bioweapons, you know where to do it. And the president, still channeling his inner leftist in other areas, has unleashed a plan to print up some money and give every American $1,000. Yeah, we knew that was coming.
and the bidding war for socialism run amok has already started. So true to form, still trying to hog the camera, the Bill of Rights-hating Senate Minority Leader, Chuck E. Schumer, said Wednesday that the money-printing helicopter drops need to be bigger and more frequent. Bolshevik Bernie's already said he'll double that amount because, hey, who's paying for it anyway? Has-been Andrew Yang says he was consulted about the latest bidding war. Nancy Pelosi wants to throw in a toaster oven. And no doubt the senile, creepy criminal one who wants to play Weekend at Bernie's in the White House next will throw in a squeeze or two for your underage daughter. But in spite of all that, the headline I actually picked comes from GoldEagle.com, and it's a bit more economic analysis on the kickoff for the greatest depression ever, already in progress. Starts out like this: the last few days have been like nothing most of us have ever experienced, or are likely to experience again in our lifetimes. Panic has spread from the streets of Wuhan to the grocery stores of America's heartland, from nursing homes to the Federal Reserve Board, from the stock market to the gold and silver markets, well, the paper versions anyway. And like other asset classes, the precious metal space is being rocked by rapidly accelerating developments, some of which haven't occurred for decades and some of which haven't occurred ever. These unprecedented times, said author Stefan Gleason, are testing the mettle of precious metals investors like never before. Which brings us to the headline question. Is this what peak fear looks like? To which your host has to answer, come on, no, not hardly, because, you know, you ain't seen nothing yet. And that, of course, applies to literally everything we're talking about going on today. But in particular, he's looking at the latest undeniable example of a market that hasn't been honest for years. Historically, gold and silver have provided safe havens from financial turmoil. If history is any guide, and ultimately it will be, they still are. So why, asked the author, haven't precious metal prices skyrocketed? Well, for one thing, the bullion market, and by that he means the physical, is relatively small compared to the highly leveraged and outright crooked, your host adds, futures market that sets spot prices, usually by naked sales, in other words, selling metal that they don't have and can't be delivered, but know that since the market's rigged anyway, they won't have to. And then there's this, gold can be pulled down on any given day, writes the author, for no other reason than panicked traders that need to sell it in order to raise cash for things like margin calls. Now, we've talked about this in the last week, folks, when I interviewed Joe Jaquin of Patriot Trading Group on Monday, where he confirmed a lot of what this author is now reiterating. Never has silver been as cheap to acquire in real terms as it is today. That is, if you can get your hands on the real stuff at all. Never has the silver market traded so wildly disconnected from its fundamentals, and never have the silver bullion and silver future markets diverged so greatly. While paper silver is being hammered, shortages and premium spikes are taking hold in things like American Eagles, which are, again, almost impossible to get, and other popular silver bullion products, like junk silver bags, which are probably even more difficult to get your hands on. But here's an interesting observation. Mining stocks are up, too. And if paper silver, asked Gleason, is down by double digits, and the equity market's also down double digits, how in the world do silver mining equities rise by double digits? It makes no sense, unless the markets are completely broken and totally arbitrary at this point. And yeah, that's true, because they have been for a long time. It's just that the insanity is now impossible to hide. Or, he says, unless big money counterintuitively flowed into the mining sector, because they know the silver spot price has lost credibility. In other words, folks, if you can't buy and lay your hands on real physical metal, maybe you can buy mining stocks that'll eventually produce real physical metal. Writes Stefan Gleason, when markets are driven by extreme fear, they don't produce rational outcomes. And that's arguably doubly true if they're rigged anyway, even in a non-fear-filled time. Perhaps, he writes, we've just witnessed a capitulation bottom in silver and at least a temporary peak in investor fear more broadly. The VIX Volatility Index, known as the Fear Index for the stock market, spiked on Monday to exceed the fear levels registered during the depths of the 2008 financial crisis. So, even though you may never again get an opportunity to buy silver at less than 1/100th of the quoted gold price, or to be able to get it at so cheap relative to the rest of the economy in any event, it's still very difficult to obtain the physical stuff at all during moments like these, because bargain hunters have cleared out coin dealers of most of their inventories. And here comes the key point. The upshot is that a new uptrend in silver, and probably all the precious metals, and a corresponding and inevitable narrowing of the gold-to-silver ratio can be expected to extend for years. So that means there's no need to panic in fear about missing the bottom. Just get what you can while you can. We do know, concludes the piece, that every other panic-selling event in recorded history has produced fantastic buying opportunities for investors who didn't lose their minds or their shirts. And this one will almost certainly be no different. Now here, folks, I'll pause for just a minute and note that the truly panicked people who were caught totally unawares that anything like this could possibly ever happen have far more important things on their mind, or should anyway, like where they can be that's safe and whether or not they're going to be able to eat, wherever that is. But your host has to point out again that when an economy completely collapses, like this one is obviously doing, it was prepped, pumped, and now popped. The carnage is going to play out for months and probably years, not just weeks, in spite of what the lying waste stream media is trying to push. And those who are prepared need to be thinking ahead to that. And obviously, this now includes the currency reset, long salivated over by the deep state and globalist world controllers, and recently telegraphed again by the dirty, dirty cash mantra. Guess what, folks? A lot of people, and certainly by no means all, because most are going to be just as blind and ignorant about what's coming and already here as they have been up until this point, but a lot of people are going to realize, hey, if I want to trade and have some form of an economic life, maybe the best way to do it is with a form of money that stood the test of time, like silver, and also just happens to be antiviral, antifungal, and antibacterial. Oh, and guess what? Silver coin is constitutional to boot.
And yeah, for those that have read ahead and know that the Mark of the Beast is also on the way, this might be an alternative to not being allowed to buy or sell, aka enter into commerce, without some kind of Big Brother official permission. Like not only your RFID, but your embedded vaccine card, too. So yeah, any way you slice it, and however you might see things playing out, it's definitely time to be prepared on that score, too. From there, let's take a look back at some stories from earlier in the week. Certainly predictable if you've looked at how Big Brother works throughout history, but also very revealing. This is from Mike Adams at Natural News under the headline, Breaking! Federal government, who could have thought it, to control and oversee grocery distribution with government-private sector partnership. And if you didn't have a reason to panic before, folks, that might just be it. All right, that was sarcasm, of course. Panic is never a good idea. But come to think of it, neither is fascism. Walmart, Costco, Target, Kroger, at the top grocery chains nationwide, are deemed now to be critical infrastructure. So Big Brother's going to make sure that that, too, is, well, have you heard the term FUBARD? And the National Guard is now going to protect key distribution points. And I guess if there's one thing that history has taught us by now, it's that militarized controls are a lot easier to get into than they are out of. The story from Natural News begins by saying that they have been informed by high-level sources that the U.S. FedGov is now in the planning stages of implementing a plan to protect, but of course, more importantly, control grocery distribution across the United States via the fascist, a.k.a. public-private partnerships between Big Brother and top grocery chains, including all the names you're so familiar with. Remember what the infamous deep state globalist Henry Kissinger used to say? If you control the food, you control the people. The effort, it says, is being made to ensure the smooth delivery of food supplies, like free enterprise and free people aren't capable of doing that anymore, to the public, as the coronavirus lockdown is about to commence on a regional basis, and food supplies are necessary, it says, to prevent social unrest, lawlessness, and looting. Some of us have been suggesting that the plans to foment a civil war might have been with all of that in mind. Natural News, continues the story, has learned details of the plan, which we're told is in the final stages of being completed, with some measure of rollout to begin as early as just a few days from now in at least one region of the country. And if you can figure out which left coast is further left, you'll know what that means. Trump, says Adams, we're told, is working day and night to coordinate a response that keeps the American people fully supplied with food, medicine, water, and security, Achtung, und that this plan will be implemented with absolutely zero advance warning to the public. Well, says Adams, at least globalism is starting to implode, and the days of outsourcing everything to China might be over. Let's hope, he says, that Trump decides to use this opportunity to promote the importance of nationalism and redundant supply lines filled with made-in-America goods and materials. But given what we've already seen, folks, suffice it to say that your host is far more skeptical. I'm not alone on that score, by the way. Celeste Solem, former insider with a lot of government connections, writes via shepherdsheart.life about her concerns regarding global fascism and starts it this way. The dramatic spread of COVID-19 has disrupted lives, livelihoods, communities, and businesses worldwide. All stakeholders, and there's a UN term for you, especially global business, must urgently come together, and she's quoting another source, we'll get to it in a second, to minimize its impact on public health and limit its potential for further disruption to lives and economies around the world. But the sum of many individual actions, says one of Big Brother's public-private partner advocates, the World Economic Forum, will not add up to a sufficient response. Catch that? Only coordinated action by business combined with global multi-stakeholder cooperation, Octung, at exceptional scale and speed can potentially mitigate the risk and impact of this unprecedented crisis. Meaning, she says, that what we're about to see is probably the formerly free United States acting in solidarity with the new global governance system. Some, by the way, have called it the beast. And yeah, she says it, and I've been saying it for a long time too, whenever you hear the term public-private partnership, and you'll be hearing it a lot in the days to come, think global fascism. And notice, she says, the direction for the global governance agenda, now oh so conveniently back in play again, is to move at lightning speed so that people caught in its trap don't have time to think and ponder the ramifications and the consequences of global fascism. But when it comes to warnings about exactly that, here's another really great one coming from the People's Republic of Denmark, which late last week rushed through, and that's the key word, an emergency coronavirus law. And the story from The Local in Denmark certainly ought to send chills down the spines of anybody old enough to remember what freedom once meant. Denmark's parliament, sick, it said on Thursday night, unanimously passed, and I got to put sick after that too for reasons that I'll make clear in a second, an emergency coronavirus law which gives health authorities the powers to force testing, treatment, and quarantine with the backing of the police. In other words, comply at gunpoint or else. The far-reaching new law, it says, will remain in force until March 2021, when it will expire, maybe, under a sunset provision. Kind of like how the Patriot Act was temporary, right? DR's court correspondent told the New Danish Slaves that they could face persecution under the new law if they refused to comply with health authorities' demands. It means, they said, that you could be sentenced to punishment if you, for example, refused to allow yourself to be tested for the coronavirus. In addition to enforced quarantines, the law allows authorities to force people to be vaccinated, even though there's currently not even a vaccination in existence for the virus. And it allows them to do all kinds of other tyrannical things as well, from prohibiting access to buildings, supermarkets, public and private nursing homes, hospitals, to public transportation, but that shouldn't surprise anybody at this point. They did manage to find a law professor at Copenhagen University, Jens L.O. Ritter, who said the measures were unlike anything passed in the last three quarters of a century. Quote, it's certainly the most extreme since the Second World War, he told a Danish newspaper. There have been some powerful encroachments in various terror packages, but this goes further, unquote. This goes further, all right, folks, and your host certainly has been warning about the tendency to overrule any and all concepts of individual freedom, given the ends justify the means mentality for quite some time now, especially when it comes to the absolute abomination of forced vaccination. You don't know what's in this, we're not about to tell you, but we're going to force you to bend over, or we'll just kill you outright, is a simple but not oversimplified way to put what they're talking about here. And notice again, they've mandated a vaccine that doesn't even yet exist. And I gotta ask it, how will they know if it's safe, much less effective, or does that even matter? Well, wait a second, if you have a mandatory vaccination law, and the guinea pigs aren't allowed to say no anyway, obviously you've already got the power to do large-scale human testing on the disarmed slave population. Now, maybe this is the only good news in the entire article, and the only place they backed off from true outright Nazi-style tyranny. Originally, the Big Brother government of Denmark also wanted the law to give police the power to enter private homes without no stinking warrant, if there was even a suspicion of a coronavirus infection. But they backed off from that one because, you know, they wanted unanimity. Trouble is, only 95 out of the 179 Danish MPs, so call it just about half, were even present to vote on the emergency law. Maybe the rest were too scared to show up, but the ones who did vote kept a safe distance from one another, it said, and voted only by standing up. I think it would have been more appropriate symbolically if they'd voted by bending over. Which brings me to the setup wrap-up with a piece from a former federal judge and former constitutionalist, although occasionally you still see a glimmer of it, Andrew P. Napolitano, who, writing for himself and LouRockwell.com and no doubt others, entitled this one, Freedom in a Time of Madness, and he begins by quoting the 1866 case, Ex parte Milligan, in the Supreme Court, that said, if you can imagine this, the Constitution of the United States is a law for rulers and people, equally in war and in peace, and covers with the shield of its protection all classes of men at all times and under all circumstances, unquote, and would that it were still true. And interestingly, he starts this off with a look back at American history and an amazing glaring oversight to boot. During the Civil War, writes Napolitano, when Abraham Lincoln, he doesn't say it, I will, the first truly tyrannical American president, thought it was expedient to silence those in the northern states who challenged his wartime decisions by incarcerating them in military prisons in the name of public safety, he was rebuked by a unanimous Supreme Court. And the essence of that rebuke was that no matter the state of difficulties, whether war or pestilence, the Constitution protects our natural rights, and its provisions are to be upheld when they pinch, as well as when they comfort. Now, ironically, folks, this was right after the war to end the Constitution, where it turned out they turned that document into a roach motel. No matter how much the central government violated the terms, states can check in, but they can never check out. Says Napolitano, kind of ignoring what's been happening for the last 150 years or so, this is, or at least was, a basic principle of American law. Our rights can only be interfered with by means of due process. And it's being put to a severe test today in most American states. Gee, do you think? Come on, Andy. The violation of the First Amendment's been going on at least since the late 1800s, and the gang rape of the Second Amendment has been continuing since the first real infringement in the fascist 1930s. And have you completely forgotten what happened in 1913 to the concept of, among other things, honest weights and measures and nothing but gold or silver coin being made a tender in payment of debts? Well, here at least is where he gets a bit right. The backstory, as Napolitano calls it, the coronavirus pandemic, which ravaged Italy and China, has now arrived in the United States, and our central planners have panicked. Hey, we don't have a free market here in healthcare delivery. Rather, we have thousands of pages of regulations and control, and he gets this right, at the federal, state, and local levels. And all of this control was revealed as manifestly deficient and ignorant when the virus, inevitably, your host adds, struck. And the feds have been so protective of their mandated control of all healthcare, an area of governance that the Supreme Court, as if they could read the Constitution for what that matters, has even ruled that is nowhere delegated to them in the Constitution, but except for their power to tax those who defy them would be non-existent, and now they're insisting that only the Centers for Deadly Contamination, or CDC by another name, in Atlanta can be trusted to test, how about that for irony, for the virus. And it took weeks for their obvious incompetence to be admitted, as physicians, as well as most private and state government-owned labs, were deprived of the test kits themselves. When it comes to totalitarian impulses, even mayors and governors haven't been outdone by the feds. Many of them, particularly in the Northeast and the Left Coast, have issued decrees that are as profoundly unconstitutional as even the infamous Lincoln's efforts to silence dissent. Thousands of businesses have already been shuttered, well over a million people are already out of work, with more to follow, and the fundamental constitutionally protected rights of hundreds of millions of Americans, violating numerous sections of the Constitution, are again being thrown under the bus. So as we go to break, I'll note that the planned global economic reset is a really nasty element of what's going on here, but the excuse for a truly fascist public-private tyranny may be an even bigger goal. We'll pick it up there when we get back. You ain't seen nothing yet. Baby, you're just dancing. Welcome back again now to the second segment for this evening's show, folks. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and literally, this show, I guess, could be entitled You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet, but in another respect, it probably also could called a conspiracy connect the dots, because the truth of the matter is, if you go back and look at all of the conspiracies that have been literally floating around for a long, long time now, I'm talking decades, and essentially ever since the progressive movement and 1913, the establishment of the unconstitutional Federal Reserve and its enforcement arm, the IRS, with the whole point of getting rid of constitutionally honest weights and measures, gold and silver, and then instituting a total tyranny, and I think I'm quoting something like the Declaration here, over the inhabitants of these shores, a law foreign to our Constitution and laws and so forth. Well, a lot of stuff is beginning to come together, and literally, you couldn't have asked for a better excuse than what we're now seeing. So one of the things that I think that's interesting is a lot of argument about, was this virus made in China? Note that the president's calling it the China virus. I've been calling it the Wuhan coronavirus since long, long before the president or most of Congress or the media was even willing to admit that it just might be a problem. We had beta test after beta test. This one finally took root and took wings and resulted in the increasingly desirable, it would seem, panic that they finally got going. So, you know, you've seen, maybe you've heard a number of the stories that, for example, during the Obama regime, the variants on the coronavirus were developed at the University of North Carolina, just like the Clinton regime before him, a whole lot of technology, whether we're talking interstage technology for missiles or whether we're talking the sale of uranium to the real Russians by Hitler herself, fomented with the help of none other than Robert Mueller. Or you name it, folks, bioweapons that may have been transferred from University of North Carolina to the, guess what, biosafety level 4 lab outside Wuhan. Can we prove any of this? Well, if the people who did such a great job of deep-sixing disk drives, bleach-bitting them, and then with FBI cooperation making the very drives themselves get hammered into non-existence, have been continuing their efforts, it's going to be really, really hard, isn't it? But nevertheless, the question remains, who done it? And, you know, follow the money, follow the influence, who benefits, quo bene, all of those things are important. But here's the question, was it made in China or was it made in America and then released and blamed on China? And you got to admit, when it comes to who benefits, maybe both do. The communist Chinese would certainly like to see America brought down. Looks like this bioweapon is doing it. They're not adverse to having a whole bunch of their own people killed in the process. If they're willing to go to a war in other ways, hey, why not? Go ahead and put a little bit of a tank in your own economy and kill even a few million people. They got plenty, and they've seemed to have no qualms in the past about killing millions of them at a time. So the question is, was it communist totalitarians in China that developed and released the virus with the help of people around the world? Remember, when a virus like this does finally get out, you can rest assured there are all kinds of scientists from multiple nations gathering samples, taking them back to their own biolabs, and working on the next round of enhancements. So was it communist totalitarians in China that did it, or in the deep state USA? And maybe it was released by fascist totalitarians instead, but ultimately, there's not much difference there. They have the same goals, the same proclivities towards killing all of the peons that they need to that get in their way, and the only real difference ends up being who gets to be the totalitarians in charge. Is it the Clinton, Obama, etc. regime over here, or is it something with a more Chinese name? With that in mind, I want to go back and just kind of connect a couple of dots. I've already mentioned this before. I think it was interesting that literally today, via the International Man and Lou Rockwell, Doug Casey, who's a well-known libertarian, I like Doug, a lot of his stuff and a lot of his ideas, I would say, line up pretty well with a constitutional libertarian point of view, even Torah-oriented. But you have to recognize that Casey is not a Bible believer, and that's where we part company. In any case, he has a similar point of view on this to one that I've already expressed, saying that the virus itself is what we call a first-order effect. You don't want to talk much about the virus itself, because even though worst-case numbers like a million deaths in the U.S. have been tossed around, that's far and away not the biggest problem. Now, I've mentioned this. I did a show a couple of weeks ago here, towards the end of February, on that very subject, suggesting that the economic effects, and we're seeing that now, are far, far more deadly, and perhaps even worse are the totalitarian follow-on effects that seem to have been, well, in addition to the idea of covering up the economic meltdown that was inevitable anyway, the real goal here. He calls those second-order effects, the economics that result from shutting down the entire economy as a result of hysteria, and then the third-order effects, new laws and various totalitarian state actions, are the ones that he agrees will have the longest-lasting consequences. Now, here's the part of this that's interesting. It helps to, again, connect a few dots. Just in the last generation, we have seen, here comes, hantavirus, bird flu, swine flu, Zika virus, West Nile virus, MERS, SARS, and H1N1, and some other H's and N's along the way. And we've had anthrax, too, which everybody at least seems to have almost forgotten about. They've all had their day in the dark sun, he says, of mass hysteria. And I have referred to each and every one of them as they've come out in the news as various forms of beta tests. And the idea is, each time you release one of these, you begin to see how much panic you engender. Are people buying it? Are people getting scared? Is it having the economic knockoff effects? Well, you can hone it. You can massage it a little bit. And of course, if you continue to improve the viruses themselves, you can actually get one that finally does have the booga 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 proper terror effect. That leads me to pause just for a second, because Doug Casey does note that if you look at the worst case scenario when it comes to the virus itself, no one really knows, he says, because it's a novel. That means a new virus. The human immune system, given that it was developed in a lab, just hasn't been exposed to it. And to some extent, all of the world's biolabs are getting a real ground, a bird's-eye view, I guess, or ground-level view of the effects. And maybe between 1 and 2% of the people who get it will die. But again, it's not the lethality that matters. It's the panic that it engenders and the economic destruction that we're already seeing play out. Now, that leads me just a couple of quick comments, then I'll come back to Casey here, from another piece by Gary D. Barnett, also via Lou Rockwell, who talks about fear and fear itself, and notes that Americans have simply gone insane over this latest new monster. And he says this, now I don't agree with this, but I'll at least give him his due for a second. Created out of thin air, called the coronavirus, and the panic is the most pathetic sight I've seen in my life, writes Barnett, because without any initial testing, without any proof or certainty of what this new fake threat, he writes, to all of mankind actually is, the world is now in lockdown, no doubt about that, and it's therefore very easy to control. Now, here's the key, and I've already emphasized this. A better plan for the globalist totalitarians could not have been imagined, because the sheep just plain get into line for shearing without any resistance or question. It's about testing the gullibility and fear of the populace, and that's been going on again for a while. We now know exactly what's happening, and it's just like Bill Gates previewed it in his idiocy called Event 201. Lots been written about this. Just a month or two back, it would have been the initial test and propaganda set piece to start this engine. Now, the U.S. economy has clearly been decimated due to spending, debt, and money creation for many years. In other words, it was primed for the big fall. All it took was this pin, and this pin finally popped the biggest debt bubble in human history. And consider that back in 2008, the markets should have failed. But instead, what we've gotten is more money printing, more debt, more derivatives, more leverage. So the current economic picture is not only far worse, but has reached the pinnacle of disaster. Now, he makes a whole bunch of good points in here. Says, get prepared for total chaos, economic destruction, martial law, forced vaccinations, permanent job loss, lockdowns, panics, riots, state violence against dissenters, and all the usual stuff that we've come to expect. And the conspiracy theorists have been saying they have been looking for an excuse all along for. So the only place where I would part company with Gary D. Barnett is to say, come on, they've been doing the research, why not unleash a real bioweapon? Because you might as well kill a few people while you're accomplishing the rest of your goals too. Besides, that makes it a little bit easier to get the real panic good and going. Okay, back then to Doug Casey, who says no one really knows what the effects might be because this is a novel virus, a new virus. I'm going to mention something that no mainstream media dare talk about. Now, I've talked about this before, prior to the coronavirus, and pointed out that any number of ways, U.S. chemical weapons, for example, that are called binary weapons, they consist of two parts. Part A, Part B. If you've ever used epoxy, you know you've got the resin and the hardener. Part A, Part B. You mix them together, and then the fun starts. You know, the super glue. It's not really super glue, but it's an epoxy anyway. It gets very strong. That happens. Well, in the case of chemical weapons, the two parts themselves are not quite, or even in some cases, not even deadly at all. And as a result, they don't fall under the various bio or chemical weapons treaties. Isn't that convenient? So you can stockpile all of those, and then you just have them on hand. You can combine them when you need them. But ha-ha, aren't we clever? We got around the treaty terms. Well, how about, and I mentioned the example years ago of a test that killed a whole bunch of dogs and cats all across America because there was a two-part poison that was introduced. Melamine was one part. I forget the chemical name of the other. But it's a filler. Just put it in dog and cat food. Lots and lots of dogs and cats ate it, and it was didn't do anything. Just kind of stored in their internal organs until part B comes along, and all of a sudden, crystals form. I believe it was in their kidneys or liver. I forget which one. But in any case, the result was death, literally irreversible, unstoppable, within a couple hours at most. And people didn't know why their pets were just plain dropping over dead. And because it was a two-part poison, people couldn't even identify what was going on for the longest time. Isn't that clever, too? You put part A of the poison out there, people get it, and then when you're ready for the 1-2 punch, aha, here comes part B. Well, given that we already know that this particular bioweapon, the coronavirus, engenders itself into the cells and puts some HIV-type proteins in place, what does that do? Suppresses an immune system response. And if the immune systems of people around the world have already been cleverly suppressed by various Big Brother public-private partner initiatives, I'm thinking things like glyphosates, genetically modified frankenfoods, aspartame, and now 5G, you name it, all kinds of ways of putting autoimmune diseases into people, destroying their immune response, and basically making them vulnerable to the 1-2 punch. Well, can you imagine the devastation if already being fearful, somebody, whoever has part B, and I don't doubt that there are probably labs all over the world that have been looking at it, whether they have it or not, I guess we'll say remains to be seen, releases it. Is this why governments of the world are so terrified? In other words, is there really something real here that's causing them to be afraid, be very afraid? All I'm going to suggest is I disagree with Casey on the fact that the worst case scenario is the few percent of people dying. And of course, I have talked about this for a long time too. Just understand, and he's right here, given conflicting reports about people dropping dead and, you know, all kinds of scary stuff with video evidence seems to suggest, but the official numbers never do, it's pretty clear we don't know much. But one thing's for sure, the world has been gripped by a genuinely titanic and literally insane hysteria. All right, on to the economic meltdown. Talked about this. Airlines are shut down. An airliner all in costs about $10,000 a day, whether it flies or not. Same to some extent for hotels. Restaurants, similar concept, lesser numbers. How are all these people going to pay their rent, pay the mortgages, pay the equipment fees, not to mention the employees, a lot of whom are already being laid off. And if they don't, what are the knock-on consequences, right? The landlord doesn't get his money, and he then, in turn, can't pay his bills, and the dominoes fall. Especially given that the U.S. has what's called a service economy. And we got rid of manufacturing thanks to the previous gutting, courtesy of the Federal Reserve, and tax laws, and insane regulations, and the destructive effects of previous communist regimes, like the Obama regime and those before it. So now we're mostly a so-called service economy, and even a consumer economy, which is kind of stupid, notes Casey, because it takes the emphasis off production and puts it on consumption. And if you're consumers and aren't able to be consuming, and besides which, the communists that are producing the stuff at essentially very low costs aren't doing it either, you're missing parts and so forth, well, again, the dominoes fall. Services are the first things to go. Hospitality and travel alone is estimated to be about 10% of the entire world's economy. You can see where this is going. And, of course, distortions cranked in by decades of money printing are now going to be liquidated. Isn't it amazing, though, as the dominoes fall, there are those that have been looking for this global currency reset. Remember the Phoenix currency rising out of the ashes of the dollar decline? I have talked about the fiat dollar meltdown, folks, for probably as long as I've been doing radio. Certainly well over a decade, probably twice that. It's been a long time coming, but it'll be a long time gone. Call it not just a trickle down, but avalanche down at this point. All right, the bigger threat, though, is poverty, not flu, from the economic meltdown, which really kills masses of people. And finally, the even bigger question, what is Big Brother going to do? They'll probably set up a new national health regulatory agency. Won't that be wonderful? Or give the Federal Death Administration more powers. The FDA, he notes, is to medicine what Amtrak is to railroads. And they kill more people every year than the Defense Department does in a typical decade. And let's not forget, when they put travel restrictions in place, there's TSA, or Transportation Sexual Abuse, that's looking for more power, too. I happen to have this thought earlier in the week. You know that TSA already gets in your pants. That was the reason that they were put in place to inure people to the idea that you don't have any privacy anymore. We don't need no stinking warrant. We don't need no stinking excuse. And you certainly don't need no stinking Fourth Amendment. So now TSA already gets in your pants. Next, your bloodstream. Oh, and they want your DNA, too, so you look for roadside swabs and checking. Think about it. If you're wanting to develop a bioweapon and release part two, how better than to have all the DNA from all the people who are literally caving in and lining up to be swabbed in part one? All right, more. This is the worst of all possible worlds, says Casey. And, yeah, you can blame the Fed. The blame will go to capitalism, though, instead. And we now see modern monetary theory. The administration, allegedly a conservative administration, is already announcing helicopter money, bailouts. Is it going to be $1,200? Is it going to be more? Hey, but the peons, the serfs, are lining up because only the God of Big Brother can save me from the thing that they created and somebody, at least, Big Brother somewhere, unleashed. But everybody gets to profit if you have the right connections. Okay, says Casey, I don't fear the virus nearly as much as the second and third order effects. And you got to understand that the pin that broke the financial hyperbubble has already started a cascade of consequences. And it's likely we'll have a deflationary collapse before we go into the inevitable and long-planned hyperinflation. Essentially what he says, and I agree, is the only alternative for the average person to protect themselves economically is gold and silver. And, of course, not the fake stuff, which has been in free fall, but the real stuff, which basically is not only going the opposite direction, but it's almost impossible to get a hold of. You're going to pay a whole heck of a lot more than the bogus paper prices in order to get it. But remember, and I've talked about this enough, I won't belabor it today, silver is, scripturally and constitutionally, is real money. The very same word in the Hebrew means both silver and money, and it is lawful coinage. So here is the way for people to protect themselves if they can get it, if they haven't already prepared for it. Get some silver coin and recognize that when all of these totalitarian things come down, that's one way to be out of the system. Now, I'll wrap up today with just a couple of comments from Brandon Smith. There are a whole lot of essentially libertarian-oriented folks issuing the same warnings. We've all been thinking about this for decades, and so now is the time to say, hey, here it is. Says Smith, half the country's in denial, the other half's finally awaking from apathy and frantically trying to prepare, even if they don't know what they're doing because they're inexperienced and they prioritize comfort over practicality. But the reality is finally hitting the masses. Something is up, and it's kind of like a sucker punch. Suddenly the prepper movement doesn't look so crazy after all, and even those who belittled them are starting to say, maybe I need to get a gun so that I can try to go steal their stuff. Who knows? The people who used to accuse us of being chicken littles and fear porn and doom mongers are now eerily silent, writes Smith. And there's a reason, obviously, and this is the key, and it's literally already something that's, I think, pretty obvious. A reason why the establishment refused to inform the citizenry of the instabilities that were already baked into the cake, and the pandemic scenario simply made them clear. The more unknowns there are for the public, the more panic will set in, the more chaos ensues, and that chaos can be exploited. Remember, never let a perfectly good crisis go to waste to push forward a number of agendas, especially the totalitarian agenda, the new world currency agenda, and the control agenda in general. global centralization, as well as erasure of constitutional liberties. Now, the question is, should this be allowed to happen? Of course, Big Brother is going to say, don't worry your pretty little heads about it. Sit back, relax. We'll take care of everything until you're too stupid to realize what we've already done, and pay no attention to those chains around your ankle. The government, he suggests, is simply trying to keep people passive to the danger that they themselves are pushing, so that when the system inevitably breaks down, they'll be unprepared, desperate, and easier to manipulate. They've been doing this for months, and they're still doing it. So, here's the key question. Why, oh why, would anybody with half a brain suddenly take their advice or even take orders from them when the inevitably manure hits the fan? They have utterly failed in their responsibilities to inform and protect the citizenry. They're about to violate their prime mandate to secure these rights. Governments are instituted among men. Remember that? They don't. Which is to protect the personal liberties that made our society, once anyway, worth living in. Without these freedoms, there's no point in trying to keep this system afloat and intact anyway. You heard the mantra, we'll all have to make sacrifices. Well, God-given rights have already been sacrificed far more than enough. We need to know what we're fighting for, says Brandon Smith, what we're struggling for, and just merely surviving is meaningless if we have to accept tyranny in order to get it. And remember, once Big Brother usurps freedoms, they have never had a record of giving them back. You can think back, if you're old enough, to 1913. And the Federal Reserve and its enforcement arm, the IRS. How about the right to keep and bear arms that was done away with starting in the late 1930s? You have the Oklahoma City bombing that brought the Anti-Terror Act. That's still around. The 9/11 false flag that brought the Patriot Act. Remember how it was supposed to expire or sunset? Ha ha! Don't count on that. And of course, there's transportation and sexual abuse. And they're salivating at the new powers they may get out of all of this. So the claim that all of this is hype, right, the fake, in order to justify resistance is, that's a bogus argument. The fact is, it can in fact be a real deadly virus, or at least deadly in part, maybe there's part two coming, and a totalitarian response is still unacceptable anyway. Okay, here's the key. You can ignore the virus if you want, but the economic collapse is already here. It's already undeniable. And accept, therefore, that the national and global emergency is real, even if it has been oh so cleverly sold and engineered. So the question remains, should governments be allowed to implement martial law in response? Do you trust a government that may have done this, but certainly has allowed it, fostered it, fomented it, and kept the sheeple ignorant to do anything productive now that they've got what they've been looking for so long rolling? All right, there's a lot more. He points to the mayor of Champaign, Illinois, a scumbag named Deborah Frank Finan, who has given herself emergency powers, dictatorial and Soviet they might be, demanding the power to enforce curfews, ban public gatherings, ban alcohol, and ban and confiscate firearms, as well as to steal supplies from any of the citizens of that totalitarian little city that they might want if they're needed for an emergency response. And I'll say it this way, folks. Once upon a time, this is what tar and feathers were for. They might have sufficed. Now, and the founders knew this because they put it in place, that is the point of the Second Amendment. Smith points out Executive Order 13603, put in place by the last totalitarian regime, and it allows the government to literally appropriate everything, and we may see that coming into play. The good news and bad news here is that, there are more people homeschooling. There are more people that are looking at the alternatives and the exposure of what Big Brother is up to here. The bad news is obvious. And the question is, out of the ashes, is all we get a new totalitarian mark of the beast kind of a currency system? Or do we get a resurgence of people who still understand what this nation was founded on? Who still recognize what were once called self-evident truths? That we have rights that come from God, not any earthly government of men, and that to secure these rights, that's why this government was supposed to exist in the first place. And if there ever was a time to stand up and say, we are not going to trade essential liberty for a little temporary security, especially when we know they've been lying to us all along, that time is now.